Physics World.
Hello, and welcome to the Physics World Weekly Podcast. I'm Hamish Johnston. Coming up, I'll be looking at some highlights of the past week in physics, including two breakthroughs in quantum computing, a new way of using highly focused laser beams to treat eye disease, and a new perspective on why bubbles burst. But first, we're going to talk about why astrophysicists are so excited about GW190521, a gravitational wave signal that traversed a significant chunk of the universe before arriving here on Earth last year. On the 21st of May 2019, the LIGO-Virgo detectors measured a gravitational wave signal that comprised just four short wiggles that lasted less than one-tenth of a second. After studying the signal in great detail, LIGO-Virgo scientists have concluded that it was generated by the merger of two black holes roughly 17 billion light-years away from Earth. The results of that study are published this week in two papers in leading scientific journals. And the analysis raises important questions about the origins of black holes. Furthermore, the LIGO-Virgo team has entertained the possibility that this signal may be the first to be detected from an event that is not a black hole or neutron star merger. I'm joined down the line by Laura Nuttall, who is Senior Lecturer in Gravitational Waves at the UK's University of Portsmouth and a member of the LIGO-Virgo collaboration. Hi, Laura.
Hi there.
Now, before we talk about this particular event, I was really sort of intrigued by your job title, Senior Lecturer in Gravitational Waves, because it's only really been 5 years since we've detected a gravitational wave. And you know, I suppose before that, we didn't even really know that they existed, or at least we didn't have proof.
I was just going to say that the last 5 years have been quite a whirlwind of many people, professors, senior lecturers, all sorts of people in academia that are now specializing in gravitational waves. It's wonderful.
It really is. And this event it seems particularly interesting. I mean, LIGO-Virgo has observed gravitational waves from a number of objects, merging objects before. What makes this particular event, this event that was detected in May 2019, so special?
So this event is the most massive that we've seen so far. What we expect to have happened is that a black hole, about 85 times the mass of the sun, or 85 solar masses, collided with another black hole, which was 66 solar masses. This collision resulted in another black hole being produced, another black hole that was about 142 solar masses. If you add up the masses of the initial black holes, you don't actually equal the mass of the black hole that was produced. In fact, we expect something like 8 times the mass of the sun was radiated away in the collision in gravitational waves. And this is what gave us the signal, GW190521.
Now, that's an incredible amount of energy. And I'm guessing that that's why we could see this event, even though it took place so far away from Earth.
That's exactly right. Because it was so big and so huge at where the event took place, it could then propagate throughout the entire universe and reach us just last May.
All of the black holes involved in this collision are huge, aren't they? The black hole that was produced, I think 142 solar masses, is that the largest black hole that LIGO has seen since it's been, or LIGO-Virgo have seen since they've been scanning the universe for gravitational waves?
It's certainly the largest resulting black hole that we have seen so far. It's really interesting. The 142 solar mass black hole sits in a very intriguing realm called the intermediate mass black hole region. In this region, we expect black holes to have masses that are between 100 and 100,000 solar masses. And there have so far been no definitive observations of intermediate mass black holes.
So this is the first one. And I think the progenitor black holes, the two black holes that combined, there's something very interesting about their mass as well, isn't there? Particularly the heavy one. Is it a black hole that maybe shouldn't exist? Or, well, we know it probably exists, but there's some questions about how that heavier progenitor black hole formed in the first place.
Indeed, that black hole that's 85 solar masses is very intriguing. So we typically like to class black holes by their masses. And so black holes at different parts of the black hole mass spectrum form in different ways. At the top end, the heaviest black holes are where the supermassive black holes that, say, live at the very centre of our galaxies live. Whereas at the lower end, we have stellar mass black holes. Now, these black holes tend to have masses that are between a few to tens of that of the Sun. And we think that they form by the collapse of a massive star during a supernova. Now, up to now, all the black holes that LIGO and Virgo have seen can be explained by the collapse of a massive star to form a black hole. But based on our understanding of how the internal workings of massive stars are, we can't produce a black hole that is 85 solar masses in this way, because there's a phenomenon called pair instability that prevents a massive star collapsing and producing an 85 solar mass black hole. In fact, we expect there to be a gap between 65 and 130 solar masses in the black hole mass spectrum. So it's really intriguing to wonder, how did this 85 solar mass black hole form?
And this pair instability, there's some interesting particle physics here, I suppose. What happens is photons within the star turn into, is it an electron and positron pair? And those particles, electrons and positrons, are not very good at halting the collapse of the star. And the star just explodes very violently without leaving a black hole behind. Is that what happens?
That is indeed correct. Electron and anti-electron pairs are created, and they basically cause the star to become unstable against the gravitational collapse. And the resulting explosion is so strong that it leaves absolutely nothing behind.
And so you've got this this black hole that, you know, sort of weighs in at over 80 solar masses. How is it formed then? How did it get into this pair?
Yeah, that's a really, really interesting question. GW190521, it suggests that one of two things, really. It either suggests that stars can, in fact, form high-mass black holes, and this would challenge our understanding of how massive stars work, or, if you like, stellar evolution. And that's very exciting in itself. Or, and this is what I probably would guess has happened, that the black hole was created by a different way, perhaps due to the merger of previous black holes. For instance, two black holes collided and then created our 85 solar mass black hole that then got into a binary with our 66 solar mass black hole. But for this multiple merger scenario to occur, the black holes need to have formed in really special environments where there are enough black holes nearby to create multiple merger events. Now, these environments could be in dense clusters of galaxies or in the disks of active galactic nuclei, for example.
And I mean, I understand in this study, you were able to look at the spins of the two black holes before they merged and their sort of relative orientation. If you look at the spins of these black holes, can that give you any information about how that binary pair formed and whether this idea that there was a previous merger or is there enough information out there to get a handle on how this system was formed?
You're right in thinking that you should look at the spins of the black holes to try and understand, if you like, the formation scenario. The spin should give you an idea of how the system came to be. But in this particular case, the information was inconclusive. We can't make a definite, firm statement about which way the black holes formed.
Another thing that really intrigued me about this particular event is that it was detected using, I suppose, two different search techniques. Could you explain a bit more about that?
Absolutely. So we typically look for transient gravitational waves that last fractions to many seconds, either in a form of a match-filtered search or as a burst search. So in a match-filtered search, we look for a very specific pattern. We have fingerprints of gravitational waves and we search for them in the data. A burst search, however, just looks for anything unusual, if you like, a burst of excess power. Now, for this event, it was detected by both forms of searches, but intriguingly, it was picked up a bit more clearly in the burst search.
So does that mean that the signal doesn't quite fit the mold for a merger? That there is a possibility that it could be something else?
Perhaps. Perhaps the gravitational waves were emitted by a collapsing star in our galaxy. The signal could also be from the cosmic string produced after the universe inflated in its very earliest moments. But in these two scenarios that I just randomly highlighted, they don't match the data as well as a binary merger. A binary merger is still the most plausible explanation for this event. Quite simply, the simpler explanation tends to be the right one.
Right. And I would imagine that in the case of an exploding star in the Milky Way, would we also have seen the light from that exploding star and detected the light at roughly the same time that we detected the gravitational waves? Does that, the fact that we didn't see light from a nearby exploding star, does that sort of rule that out, or is it still a possibility?
I'd like to think that it would rule it out. As you said, if this event took place in the galaxy, it would shine really, really brightly. And since we alert the public when we think we found a signal as soon as we possibly can, then I would hope that if it was within the galaxy, many astronomers would have seen a signal.
And sort of staying on this idea of a flash of light, I think a very different flash of light has been associated by a group of scientists who published a paper in July of this year. And they're saying that there may have been a flash of light from a distant quasar that corresponded to this event, this black hole merger. And their theory is that the resulting black hole was sort of kicked through a quasar and managed to somehow produce light. Is that something, does that seem credible to you? I suppose anything's possible.
It's a very interesting paper. In it, the authors present the first plausible electromagnetic counterpart to a binary black hole merger in an active galactic disk. However, since then, we've done subsequent reanalysis of the LIGO and Virgo data of this event, and we've updated our sky maps. Now, these are the regions on the sky where we expect the signal to have come from. So now, after this update, it seems marginal that the active galactic nuclei that flared that these authors had seen can be associated to GW190521.
Right. So is that because it's simply not in the right place in the sky, or maybe too far away from what you have identified as the location in the sky for the black hole merger?
Right, yeah. So typically we produce, if you like, a volume of the universe where we expect the signal to have come from. We know roughly how far away the signal is, and we know roughly where on the sky it should have come from. So in reality, if you saw an electromagnetic counterpart, it should be within this volume that we produce. And unfortunately, it doesn't seem like that might be the case now, or at least it's marginally within that volume.
Another thing that sort of intrigues me about black hole mergers is, you know, we mentioned earlier this tremendous amount of energy that's released during the merger. Why is there no or very little electromagnetic radiation produced?
That's also a very good question. Black holes we expect to be electromagnetically dark because they don't have any baryonic matter, i.e., the matter that, say, we are made up of. There are various scenarios in which black holes may have a disk around them or something like that. And if that material got accelerated, then it could produce an electromagnetic counterpart. And that's obviously what everybody is still looking for, the potential that there is something special going on around black holes that might produce an electromagnetic counterpart. but typically we don't expect there to be any light, X-rays, gamma rays, things like that.
Now, the third LIGO-Virgo observing run began in April 2019. So this event was captured within that observing run. But unfortunately, it had to stop short in March 2020 because of the pandemic. How did that third run go overall? Did the detectors meet expectations after upgrades? Is everything working very well?
Yes, indeed. The observing run was really successful, and it was only cut short by a month. We were due to come offline anyway in April 2020 for upgrades. But since we came offline earlier in the year, we've been very busy analysing all the data from the third orb observing run, and we've found some really intriguing things so far. We've already told everybody about GW190425. That's perhaps the heaviest binary neutron star system ever seen. GW190412 is the first observation of an unequal mass black hole merger, and GW190814 was either caused by the collision of a black hole with the most massive neutron star or the lightest black hole ever seen. Now, in the third observing run, we issued public alerts every time one of our detection algorithms suspected it found a gravitational wave. We issued over 50 alerts. So, we've only told you about four things so far, so there's a lot more exciting science yet to come.
Well, that sounds great. And so what's next then? I'm hoping that that all three labs will be, you know, sort of opening soon. Is the plan to continue observing, or do you have another upgrade scheduled?
Yeah, so scientists are starting to go back to the detectors now, and we're looking to the future towards the fourth observing run, which is scheduled to begin in early 2022. There's lots to be done to bring both the LIGO and the Virgo detectors up to near their design sensitivity. So people are now starting to work hard to think about the upgrades so that we can see even deeper into the universe and detect even more exciting gravitational waves.
And what sort of upgrades are you working on at the moment?
We're looking at taking some things out of the instruments and putting in upgrades to some of the mirrors. We're also putting in techniques to reduce various forms of noise. There's a lot of really exciting, really wonderful experimental techniques that are going into the instruments now to bring their sensitivity to 50% extra to what they were this year.
And what's on your wish list in terms of what you would like to see observed by LIGO Virgo over the next few years? Are there some sort of hot targets that you're looking forward to seeing?
Oh gosh, there's all sorts of wonderful things that I'd love to see. I guess in some respects, I'd love to see a supernova explosion. I'd love for us to be able to see something in gravitational waves, neutrinos, and electromagnetic, and combine all of that information together. Supernova explosions in the galaxies is typically rare. I think on the order of something about one in 50 years. I think we're still due for one, but I'd love to be able to work on that data and to work with other astronomers from around the world to see what interesting physics we can understand. But apart from that, really, I would just love more binary neutron star and neutron star black hole detections. And with that data coincident with electromagnetic data. So far, we've only really got electromagnetic data from GW170817, the first binary neutron star merger, where we learned so much about, the nature of short gamma ray bursts and the origin of some of the heavy elements. So I think if we can observe more and more of these things, we'll understand more and more about our wonderful universe.
You can read more about this discovery on the Physics World website. Just look for the headline, LIGO Virgo spots the most massive black hole merger so far. Thanks for being on the Physics World Weekly Podcast, Laura.
Thanks for having me.
Now, let's take a look at some other highlights on the Physics World website this week. First up are two stories on quantum computing. Quantum computers use fragile quantum states to store and process information. These quantum bits, or qubits, suffer from a process called decoherence, in which their quantum nature is rapidly destroyed by thermal noise and other environmental disturbances. While more reliable qubits may be developed in the future, practical quantum computers today use a scheme called quantum error correction to ensure that decoherence does not derail calculations. Unfortunately, error correction requires lots of qubits, which are not easy to make or integrate. But now, physicists at Yale University in the US have demonstrated experimentally an error correction protocol first proposed nearly 20 years ago. A protocol that drastically reduces the number of qubits required for error correction. You can read more about this in an article called Quantum Error Correction Achieved Using Oscillator Grid States by Tim Wogan. In other quantum decoherence news, physicists in the US have studied the effect of background radiation on superconducting qubits. Although they found that background radiation is currently not a significant source of decoherence, it may become significant as other effects are minimized. The team believes that in the medium term, high-performance quantum computers could be installed underground to minimize their exposure to background radiation. They also say that further research is needed to minimize the effects of background radiation on qubits, so that large computers can be operated above ground. You can read more about that in Quantum Computers May Be Heading Underground to Shield from Cosmic Rays by Edwin Cartledge. In medical physics, researchers in the US have devised a new way to use X-ray beams to treat the eye disease wet age-related macular degeneration. By focusing the beam down to a width of less than 0.2 millimeters, the team can tailor the treatment to the size of the lesion in each patient. The team verified the technique using computer simulations, and now plan to build a prototype that can deliver focused kilovoltage radiation, and they hope to conduct human clinical trials in the next few years. You can read more in Focused X-ray Beams Provide Personalized Treatment for Common Eye Disease by Cynthia Keene. Finally, have you ever wondered why air bubbles pop after they've risen to the surface of a liquid? Well, you're not alone. Physicists had thought that gravity pulling down on the bubble membrane played a crucial role in the popping. But recent work by physicists in the US says otherwise. The team at Boston University created bubbles at the surface of an extremely viscous fluid and then quickly flipped the sample over so that the bubble pointed downwards instead of upwards. This allowed them to conclude that surface tension and the dynamic stress of the liquid that forms the bubble are the main causes of bubbles popping, and not gravity. You can read more about this in the article Why Bubbles Burst in Viscous Liquids by Isabel Dumais. I'm afraid that's all the time we have for this week's podcast. Thanks to Laura Nuttall for joining me today. And also a special thanks to our producer, Callum Jelf. If you like what you've heard this week, you can subscribe to the Physics World Weekly podcast via Apple Podcasts or another podcast app of your choice. Or you can follow us on Spotify. Thanks for listening, and please do join us again next week.
Physics World.